Let me read real quick from the Gospel of Luke. We read from this area of Luke last week as we started this series of vulnerability. And I'd like to read another passage from the same area in chapter 6 of Luke. Jesus is still delivering his sermon on the plain, and he's still trying to help people understand what he is doing, why he's here. And one of the things he does in this passage we're about to read, you know, Jesus has tried to explain to folks that we need to love like God, we need to be forgiving like God. He's trying to help them understand how God is working with us so that we can work reciprocally with God, but also with each other. And so he gives us ways to do that, and then he shares a parable too. He says, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over." Now, this is not like your box of cereals. Your box of cereal, you open it up and it's halfway empty already, isn't it? This is, if God was going to give you a box of cereal, he would fill it, shake it, push it down, fill it, shake it, push it down, until it was overflowing. This is how God will give to you. If you give even a little, God gives you back so much more. It's like you're using a teaspoon and saying, "Here, God, I give you this." And God says, "A steam shovel. Here, Tom, here, everyone, I'll give you that." So God gives us a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and overflowing. And he'll put it into your lap, because they used to use like an apron to carry this stuff. "For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." So the more you give, the more God blesses you. And then he also told them this parable. He said, "Can a blind person guide a blind person?" Yeah, maybe. But he says, "Won't both of them fall into a pit if one is leading the other? A disciple is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully qualified will be just like the teacher. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but you don't notice the log in your own eye?" This big hyperbole, a log sticking out of your eye. Jesus is using the absurd illustration to make his point. How can you say to your neighbor, "Friend, let me take out that speck in your eye," when you yourself don't see the log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take out the log from your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. When I was a kid, I read a book called A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle. Anybody read that book or any of her books? Yeah? Wasn't that a great book? I read a couple more. I think there was like a sequel after that, and I read that as well. She had a way of telling a story. Well, Madeleine L'Engle said this. She said, "When we were children, we used to think that we were grown up, or that when we grew up, we would no longer be vulnerable." Didn't we kind of think that? You know, we can't wait till we grow up so we're not vulnerable. We didn't maybe think of the word vulnerable, but we understood the concept that we wanted to have power. When you're a little kid, everybody tells you what to do, where to go, when to do it. You know, you don't have any power over yourself. And you can't wait till you're old and you can be your own boss. That's what vulnerability feels like. So she said, we thought that. But to grow up is to accept vulnerability. To be alive is to be vulnerable. There are two concepts here that sometimes we put them together and we think they're the same, but they're not. And that's guilt and shame. Guilt is something you feel when you've done something to feel it. You've done something or said something that you knew wasn't right, or at first you thought it was okay, but eventually it comes back to you and you start thinking, "Oh, that wasn't right." And it's kind of like, go back to our car analogy of like the kids. You're driving your car and a warning light comes on. The warning light tells you something's not right in the car, something needs to be looked at. Something's out of whack, and you gotta get it back into whack, whatever that is. And so we pay attention to that light. We should. Don't keep driving with that light on. So the light is sort of like a, like in our life, guilt is like a warning light. Guilt comes on us and says, something's out of whack. Something's not right. You've got to fix that. And then we can do something about it. If it's something you've done, you can ask for forgiveness. You can make amends. You can do things to fix it. But now shame is different. Shame is not connected so much with doing. It's a more of an identity. And it, shame is something that can happen to us as we're growing. People telling us you're worthless, or making us feel worthless, or making us feel stupid, or making us feel not good enough. And shame is something we feel within, and it becomes part of our identity, that we're worthless, we're useless, we're unlovable, we're unforgivable, we're horrible people, and we carry this thinking we're no good. And we think, with shame, we think, there's nothing I can do to change it. And so we can live with shame just destroying us, taking us down, and we can never rebound from shame. We think we can't. We think that that is who we are. And we carry that shame with us. It's not guilt. It's our identity. It's not a warning signal. It's something we feel unable to change. And shame corrodes our soul, because with shame we feel we can't do anything about it. It leads us to believe that that's the way it is. And we might even say, well, it is what it is. But it isn't, according to God. God says to us through Jesus that shame is not who we are, that shame is not something he wants us to carry around. Because shame does destructive things to us. Shame gets inside of us and it makes us believe things that are not true about us. And if we let that live within us, we do a couple of different things. We can take that and we begin to hide and pull away and isolate ourselves from people. Or we begin to turn it outward and we begin to thrust it onto others and we begin to bully others and we put other people down and we try to make them feel as low as we feel, because we want to hide our shame inside of us and we want to protect ourselves from pain. And I'll talk more about that next week when we talk about the armor. But shame is something that we want to protect within us, so we direct it at other people. We project those feelings on others. And bullies are usually people carrying shame in their spirits. They feel worthless. They feel unlovable. They feel that they're bad people. And they carry that shame, and so they turn it out, and they start to knock everybody else down. And they call people names to make them feel lower than they are, because they are afraid that people will see that that's true about them. So when you hear someone using negative terms towards somebody else, I can tell you, I can almost guarantee that what you're hearing is revealing more about what the person saying it is than it is about the person they're saying it to. When they call someone, you know, say, you're a loser, inside what's going on is that person is afraid you'll discover that they feel that they're a loser. And they don't want anyone to see that about them, so they're putting it out there and they're knocking everyone down so they feel like they're the last one standing. They're trying to hide. But shame that is ruining their lives, shame that is directing their whole action towards other people. Jesus says they have a cure for that. And he warns us how destructive shame can be, because all of us have been tempted. Like, people attempt to put shame on us. It's part of human nature. Probably everyone in here has felt shame at some point in their lives and, you know, put themselves down and looked at themselves as more negatively than anybody else does. And so we put that shame on ourselves, and if we find ourselves judging others, if we find ourselves saying about someone, well, that person, they're not so good. They've got problems. If we start judging people, good chance that it's going to come back to us. That's why Jesus says, don't judge lest you be judged. You will be. When you judge people, when you become a person that starts judging and condemning others, putting other people down, you become a target. Because people, we don't like that about others. We'll do it ourselves, but we don't like it about others. And if I start doing that and putting people down, people will start saying, well, what about you? What makes you all high and mighty? And start looking for my faults and failures and the cracks in me. And they'll dig at them and open them up and let everybody see them. And I will be brought down. So Jesus says, stop it. Don't judge. We don't know what another person's going through. And when I hear people saying negative things, I tend to look and see, what are they revealing about themselves? Wouldn't that make you think twice if you thought every time I call somebody some negative name, I've just shown people what I think about myself? It's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that. My mom used to say to me when I was growing up and I complained, like, that kid's so conceited. She goes, well, we hate most in others what's in ourselves. I hated that saying, but it was true. I'd start sitting there thinking, am I conceited? Maybe I am conceited. Well, I don't want to be conceited. Well, maybe he's not conceited. Maybe I just think he is because I'm so mad it's not me that's getting all the attention or something. Jesus tells us we can avoid that and we need to watch out for that. Because the short term is, see, judgment and condemnation, bullying, has a short term positive effect. The experience we've had is when I judge someone and I say something negative about them, there's a positive effect that I feel at first. The first thing might be that, haha, I got them on that one. I win. I'm better than them. I feel better about myself. I've overcome something. And we think we're good for that. And that's the long-term experience that if we let it go, if we do that, is that guilt starts to creep in, the warning light comes on, that wasn't right, what do you think you're doing? And then that guilt, if we don't pay attention to light, we shove it down, that guilt starts to turn into shame, and we start saying, what a jerk I am, I'm a terrible person, I'm a horrible person, I shouldn't be doing this, I shouldn't be doing that. And we begin to put that all on ourselves, that we identify ourselves as that person. And Jesus says, this is not where I want you to be. Shame is not, these negative feelings you have about yourself are not who you are supposed to be. Because it gets in the way of you being a good disciple. So I want to give you three things that I've found that can help. Because we don't want to be hypocrites. You know, some of the things I've said we could easily point to politicians. And say, well, politicians, look at those hypocrites. They say one thing, then they say another, and they say, I never said it. And we say, but look, there's film. Oh, that's taken out of context or whatever. You know, we can point to them, but Christians are just as guilty of being hypocrites and letting shame run our lives as anyone else. I know a man from before I came here, a man years ago who used to come into my office and complain about the rest of the church. Say, you know, I'm the only Christian in this church. And I was surprised when he said, I go, what do you mean you're the only Christian in the church? And he said, look around. I'm the only one that brings a Bible to church. Nobody else carries their Bible. And I said, that's how you judge whether somebody's a Christian or not? Then Jesus can't be even a Christian because he didn't carry a Bible around. He didn't see him with a pack of scrolls all over the place. Like, let's open up Isaiah and roll it out. They didn't carry scripture, they wrote it in their heart. And then one day he said to me, you know, I'm the humblest person in this church. And I said, you know, by saying that, you just said the opposite. How do you think you're more humble than Paul, the apostle? Yes. Really? This man had a lot of problems, I have to say, because it wasn't until later it came out that he was inappropriately touching women in the church. And he had been hiding that for decades by trying to be a super Christian. And he thought he was hiding it and that no one would ever find out. But eventually, a woman finally spoke up and said what was happening. An investigation found that this guy was in trouble and couldn't be part of our congregation unless he could get help. And And then he still made people feel very uncomfortable in church after a year of therapy, and we let him back. It still wasn't good enough. So sometimes Christians are just as liable for hypocrisy, and maybe more so than others, because we claim to be disciples and followers of Jesus, who gives us a certain way to live with one another that involves love and compassion, and we become the most judgmental people around. And we do more harm to the church than we do in bringing people in, because none of us can claim to be whole. Vulnerability is a way of finding wholeness. I don't stand here before you as someone who has it all together. I am someone who has struggled before I even knew I was struggling with it. Since I was 17, apparently I've struggled with depression, anxiety, and I did know I was OCD, but not to the extreme that I learned I was. Because I've struggled with bulimia and anorexia in my life. I've struggled with these other things, causing me to struggle and attempt to deal with it. So I don't come here and say, put me on a pedestal and say, Tom is such a great pastor because he's so good. I'm not. I'm just a regular guy like you, trying to figure out how to get through day to day with all the struggles and problems that I have to face. I'm willing to be vulnerable and say that. But for you, I give you these three things that you can do. You don't have to stand before a congregation and admit all your things, but you can go to a friend. Number one, talk to a friend who has earned your trust, that you can tell them who you are, and they won't judge you, that they will love you for who you are and hear your story. Second thing is, talk to yourself the way you would talk to your best friend if they came to you with that problem. You know, we are so hard on ourselves. We beat ourselves up so easily over things that other friends would say to us, it's not a big deal, that's no problem. But I'm always trying to be perfect, and that's part of my obsessive compulsive disorder is perfectionism. And I used to try to do things so perfectly that I couldn't accept even what I did, because I knew I could have done it better if I only had a little more time or if I had given a little more attention. Perfection is the enemy of good, because we fight it and we let good get by. So be nicer to yourself. Talk to yourself the way you would a friend would talk to you, or you would talk to a friend about the same problem. And the third thing is, own your story. This is who you are. You don't have to be afraid of it. Anybody see where I put my water? Own that story. Here it is. My diabetes, when it goes high, my mouth gets really dry. Own your story. It's your story. It's who you are. You're the unique person you are that God created you to be. So own that. Because if you own it, it then loses its power of you being attacked by others. See, if you own the story and say, yes, this is who I am, then you're not trying to hide it and protect yourself. If I tried to hide the fact that I have these issues and tried to pretend they weren't and was afraid that you would find out, then I would act in a way to protect that, because I'd be afraid you would change your opinion of me. I'm not worried about your opinion of me. I'm here to focus your opinion on God and get closer to Him. So I say to you, you know, I tell you who I am without worrying about it, because that's who I am. It's my story. And once I own it, now I can direct how it ends. I can use it to be something important for others. So own your story, so you can change the ending to what you want it to be and not be manipulated by others, even unconsciously, to do a story that's not who you are. The kids tell me it's time to end my sermon, so I will. The main thing is, vulnerability is your freedom. It's your ticket to freedom. It's your ticket to being yourself. and it takes away the power of shame. You can no longer be controlled by shame when you accept your vulnerability. Amen.
Amen.